What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 408 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. Great to be back with you folks this week. Beautiful day outside on this Tuesday. A lot to get to this week. Maybe it's not the most, positive things to talk about with certain teams this week, but got a lot to get to. There's plenty of stuff about the Red Sox that I would like to get to. We also have some Bruins, Patriots, Celtics, all kinds of off-season chatter with a couple of those teams. Got some revs we can get to as well. Also got a good top five for you guys at the end of the program. We're doing top five movies that I've seen in theater. So a little bit different than my top five movies, but recently went to the movies over the weekend. So I figured that would be a good top five to do. So that will be later in the program. We'll also check in on some NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, as well as a couple teams are close to the finals, so we'll get to that as well. But yeah, I think we're going to start this week with the Red Sox, and now it's with the Celtics have been eliminated. The Red Sox are probably going to be the team that's going to be leading the coverage on this podcast for the next couple of months, I think, before we get to, training camp for the Patriots. And I would be, very blunt with you guys this week that things are not good for the Red Sox right now. I think things are about as bad as they could be. And I know that, on this program, we try to be as optimistic as we can, but it is difficult to be optimistic with this particular team at the moment. Coming off a homestand that was just not where it needed to be. 5-5 in 10 games, and really should have done better, I think, during that homestand. And the woes continued yesterday, losing to the Brewers, in which the Red Sox waste another really good outing by Garrett Crochet, who really was very good yesterday. Sure, gave up a couple runs, but it's like you look at how he's pitched this season, it's kind of hard to believe that this team is not better than what they are, and it's strange. And we've talked about this, that all the offseason acquisitions, the major ones that the Red Sox have brought in, have all been very good. Crochet has been as advertised. He may have even be better than advertised. I figured that he's going to be the front of the rotation guy to lead the rotation, but he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. So, he's been excellent. There's really not a lot to nitpick about his performance this season. Aroldis Chapman, as much as plenty of us, including myself, have, issues with the off the field stuff, he's been really good. When he's gotten into games and has gotten into save opportunities, he's been excellent. Alex Bregman has been the Red Sox' best, most consistent offensive player, but now obviously is going to be out for a period with the quad strain, and could have him out for a couple months, it seems like. So it's been great to see those guys performing, but it just doesn't seem like, besides that, anybody else has really had, great performances this season. Devers has been great. That's what you would expect from him at the plate. I think assimilated well to being a DH and not being in the field anymore. But, yikes, you've really not gotten much from anywhere else offensively. Christian Campbell has kind of leveled off, and I don't want to, rail on him, but he's not hit the ball very well lately. Trevor Story has been, I think, one of the worst players in the majors to this point this season, and I thought got off to a good start, but he's not hitting, and the range is limited. It doesn't seem like he's anywhere close to the player that the Red Sox envisioned when they signed him a few years ago. Now, granted, he's had a lot of major injuries, but it just is like it's getting to a point where he's like not able to, like, you can't put him on the field, and that's like obviously not good. When you have to have David Hamilton or somebody else play shortstop because Trevor Story gets to sit down and not play for a few games. Just it kind of is just not like it doesn't seem like there's any kind of positives going for this team. You add in the fact that Casas is out for the season. The Red Sox are presumably, I think, just going to play musical chairs at first base, and they seem comfortable with that. You know, they made a trade for Ryan Noda last week, debuted for the Athletics a couple years ago, was released by the Angels. So maybe he's in the mix. You know, I'm assuming that he'll be down in Worcester, but it's like you got Romy Gonzalez, you got Nick Sogard playing at first base, and, you know, it's not, I don't want to be critical of them because honestly, Sogard's been fine, but it's just like this team just really has no depth. And with Bregman getting hurt, it's like I don't know how this team is going to be able to survive with just Devers. You know, Duran, I think, has played better of late, but it's like you need so much more. And Story is not helping you. Casas obviously being hurt really hurts. And now Bregman being out, it's just like it's hard to have any kind of confidence offensively when already the team's dealing with some injuries, guys being unable to hit with runners in scoring position. I mean, it's kind of the major things that we talked about a couple weeks ago, and it's kind of all the same sort of things. You know, the starter's ERA, not really where it needs to be. You know, Crochet's been the only guy that's been consistent. You know, Buehler's been fine, but he'd been hurt for a couple weeks. You know, the bullpen outside of Chapman has been shaky. You know, the runners in scoring position, they can't hit, and they're still bad defensively. They still lead the majors in errors, and it just really kind of got to a point Sunday in that Orioles game. You know, you see the, forget who it was with the Little League home run. You know, it's a double into right field. Ball comes in, they throw it around, and the guy comes all the way around to score. And it's just like that kind of stuff is inexcusable. I don't understand how this keeps happening. It seems like every year the Red Sox have some kind of insane play defensively where, you know, they have something embarrassing happen. And it's like it just is so wild to me that why this has not changed is kind of beyond me, where it's like, we're a professional baseball team. Why is that like happening? Like, why is, you know, horrible defense just kind of allowed to take place? And it's like, I don't really know what they can do about that. Like, I don't know, you know, if there's a coach that needs to be let go or what needs to happen, but it's just like that kind of stuff is inexcusable. You can't have that happen. And it's just like, I feel like this is a team that needs some kind of like jolt. And it's like anything you can do outside of firing the manager, which I'll be perfectly honest, like it's crossed my mind that maybe the Red Sox should think about that sort of thing if the season continues to get away from them. You know, I understand that Cora is playing with the hand that he's dealt, but it's like the fact that this defense continues to be terrible, like year after year, is kind of like, okay, like something's not right here. It's like, why is this continually happening where the defense is just bad? There's all kinds of like mental errors and mental lapses. It's just like they're not a developing team. It's like this is a team comes into this season expecting to win 90 games, expecting to compete in the division. You cannot use this excuse anymore of like, oh, they're developing and they're a young team. It's like, okay, well then why did you bring in Crochet? Why did you bring in Bregman? Why did you make those moves? If I don't know. It just kind of mind-boggling to me where it's like the whole goal is to compete. And sure, there's some things that have happened that have been beyond their control, of course, but it's just like there are things that need to be better, and there are things that are just like inexcusable to me with the defense. It just is like, why this keeps being like allowed to happen without somebody losing their job or somebody getting released or traded. And I'm not trying to say like, oh, they need to, release everybody on the roster and make some error, but it's kind of like there are guys on this team that I feel like are hurting more than helping, and maybe you have to make a drastic decision and, DFA Trevor Story or do something like that, because I'm not sure how they're going to stay afloat with losing Bregman and the offense performing or not performing at this rate. So it's hard to be positive about anything, and it's like we probably should be excited about Marcelo Meyer coming up this weekend, getting a hit in his second game, getting two hits in his first game, had a couple hits yesterday, and it's like really exciting that they bring this guy up who there's been a lot of conversation about and kind of delivered right away, which is just awesome to see. But it's like it's hard when, the Red Sox go through a weekend series where, they win those first two against Baltimore. You think, here we go, they're gonna get it together on this homestand, and then, offensively, they don't do anything over the last two games. Score two runs overall, score two runs in the game yesterday, lose 3-2, and it's like all the positive momentum that happened, seemingly with that offensive explosion on Friday afternoon and then the walk-off win on Saturday, just completely out the window. And it's kind of been the story with this team this year that they have something good, but it's like then something bad immediately happens. That offensive explosion, that's the game that Bregman gets hurt. And then it kind of is, seems like it's gone all downhill from there. And the Red Sox have lost three in a row, have now dropped back to fourth place in their division, split a series against the Orioles, one of the worst teams in baseball to this point in the season. And it's just hard to, again, it's hard to feel any kind of positives for this team when it just seems like bad thing after bad thing is happening. And even the guys that perform well, really aren't affecting, winning very much, which is unfortunate because you look at Crochet, you look at how well he's pitched. I think that to this point in the season, he had more wins for the White Sox last season than he did for the Red Sox this year. And the White Sox were historically one of the worst teams in the history of the league. So I don't know. It's hard to be positive. It's hard to find things to be excited about. There's certain guys that seem to be performing well, but it's like kind of doesn't matter if the team performance is, lacking. And so it's kind of hard for me to sit here and be like, okay, if they get on a run here, they'll be fine. But it's just like, you're playing the way that you are, struggling in the same areas that you've been struggling the entire season, and you've now lost your best offensive player, and you have your best pitcher who's pitched lights out this season, can't get any support. So, I hate to be all negative here because I try not to be, but it seems like it's all too familiar with this particular Red Sox team. It's kind of been this way for a couple years, unfortunately, and it's frustrating that I think we figured that this offseason was different. They make these, additions to be like, okay, we're going to go out and compete, and the performance is still very much the same. The struggles that you had, a year ago or 2 years ago, they're pretty much the same. And it's just like, I don't really know what needs to change, but it's almost like you feel that there needs to be something very drastic that needs to change for this team to have some kind of hope to pull it together. And does that mean, designated Trevor Story for assignment, releasing him, something like that? Is it firing Alex Cora? I don't think that that's the right thing to do. But it's also like this team's defense has been bad consistently. And it's kind of like, doesn't that reflect, like, I'm not sure who that reflects on. Maybe it reflects on Breslow in the front office that there's not enough depth. Does that reflect on the coaching staff that maybe there's I'm not really sure, but it's just something has to change for this team to get where they want to be. And look, they're going to have to figure it out without Alex Bregman. He's not going to be here and is not going to be performing. So it's like there's something that needs to change. There are guys that need to pick it up. You would hope that, Durant kind of takes that baton and gets the team going. Devers continuing to hit. Maybe you can get, Campbell to, start hitting again, and maybe the addition of Marcelo Meyer helps this team out. Maybe the Red Sox decide that, bringing up Roman Anthony is the right thing to do, that they can inject some kind of excitement and offense into this team that I think, desperately needs it. So, Red Sox will continue the 3-game series in Milwaukee. Red Sox have not announced a starting pitcher this evening, but Brian Baio will go tomorrow afternoon for the final game of the series. And then the Red Sox will travel to Atlanta to play a 3-game series against the Braves at the end of May. So I think, yeah, it's hard to be positive with this particular team with the way that they're playing and some, injuries that they've had to deal with. I think Toro is the guy's mostly been playing at first. Sogard's been in there as well. Marcelo Meyer, they're using him at third base. I think the idea for me of trying to use Campbell at first base, I don't think I like the idea, just based on the fact that I think he's, struggling a little bit at this point, maybe hitting a rookie wall, and I just feel like putting something else on his plate is too overwhelming at this point. And I know that, they could try to fit in, Meyer a different way, but having him play third, I don't think is a terrible idea. But I do wonder about Story at shortstop. How much longer is he gonna stay there? I'm not sure if he's gonna last through the season with the Red Sox, just based on how it's gone. Maybe he does turn it around, but I don't think I'm super, or I'm very skeptical about that. So I wonder if the Red Sox at some point move Meyer to play shortstop. Campbell, I think, will figure it out. I think that it's just he's a rookie. We kind of forget that sometimes, but I think he'll figure it out. I'm confident that he will, but it's just the Red Sox need some good things to happen to turn this around, because right now it's doesn't look good. 2 games under 500, and really kind of, I think, down in the dumps thanks to some injury issues. And it's just like there's certain guys that are playing well, but that's it. The team isn't playing well, and something really needs to change if the season is going to turn around. But it's just not looking good right now, right after Memorial Day, and we're a third of the way through the season and they've not found an identity. And it's just hard to be confident at the moment, but season's long. Maybe the Red Sox will figure it out on this road trip, but I think right now, current moment, it's a little hard to be positive. But I think we will move on. I'm going to talk some Bruins here. There's some news that actually I did want to talk about at length that I think probably made sense to focus on. So first, I think with the U.S. winning gold in the Hockey Worlds that took place over the weekend, the championship game, Team USA beats Switzerland 1-0 in overtime to win the gold. Jeremy Swayman obviously played at length for Team USA. In this tournament, was 7-0. Goals against average, that was under 2. Really played great in this tournament, and I think should make you feel positive. As a Bruins fan, I think just everything that went on last season, the offseason with the contract and missing training camp and kind of just being kind of an uneven season for him, I think definitely contributed to the Bruins not having a good season. And I'm not trying to pin the whole season on him and his struggles, because the whole team, I think, had a lot of issues last season, but I think to see him perform well in a tournament like that, a high pressure situation like that, in a couple of those games, those, knockout games, it's great to see that he was on his game. Now, I do know, obviously, this is him playing in May. It's not him necessarily playing in October when the next season starts, but I think for him to feel good about himself, feel positive, is really important, because I think as much as this Bruins team is probably going to go through a lot of major change this summer, having him as a constant and him, being the shutdown goalie that we expect him to be could make a world of difference for this team next season, that I think hopefully with, McAvoy and Lindholm being healthy this season and not missing huge chunks of the season, Swayman kind of being back to the shutdown goalie that we expect. I think just thinking about those three guys could make a huge difference. Now, I know the Bruins are a team that's going to be, out there looking for more goal scoring and ways to improve their offense, but I think seeing Swayman play that well in the tournament is really encouraging, because I think it makes you feel that, okay, maybe that season he just needed to get out of him, and for him to perform well at a tournament like this is kind of just what he needed. So I think it made sense to, touch on that and just say that you should be confident in his ability. I know that it's hard for a lot of people to move past the contract stuff last season, and they kind of can't forgive him for it, but it's like it just was a tough season, and I think there's a reason why the Bruins wanted to sign him long term, because they believe in him. And I think us as Bruins fans should believe him, and should believe in him, that he'll be able to turn things around and be a big reason why this team, I think, right moves that they make in the off season shouldn't be a surprise if they get back to postseason play, which I think would be great, if they can, kind of turn things around in an off season. May not happen overnight, but I think I am confident that he can kind of be that player that we expect him to be. The other kind of big Bruins news was Don Sweeney getting a contract extension, which, in my opinion, wasn't really surprised. I know there are a lot of people that I think don't think that he does a good job being the Bruins GM. And it's like, look, there are definitely a few things that you can look at and say it's not been good enough, drafting for sure. But I do happen to think that there are a lot of people that haven't forgiven him for the 2015 draft, where the Bruins, had those three first-round picks in a row, picked Jake DeBrusk, Jacob Zboril, and Zach Senyshyn, and obviously passed up on a lot of really good players. But it's kind of like the draft was 10 years ago. People need to just get over it. And it's like people, I think, still can't move past that, as much as that sounds crazy. And it's like, I don't think Don Sweeney is a fantastic GM. Is he one of the best in the league? No, I wouldn't say that. He's probably a top half general manager, though. I think that kind of the people that kind of just, I think, are just over the top in terms of how much they think he sucks at his job or whatnot. It's like, if you look at what, some recent years, you look at that season that the Bruins win, the President's Trophy, have the best record in league history. It's really hard to kind of be upset at the way that that team was built. Sure, there are free agent misses here and there, but that's everybody. Like, all general managers have issues with that. I do kind of think that the trade deadline was good for the Bruins, and he made some good trades. And I think the other part of this is, I don't think that the Bruins are making those kinds of moves at the trade deadline or going through a coaching search like this if there's not stability in the front office. Like, to be fair, like, what head coach is going to want to come into this situation without, security at the GM position or without a GM? It's like, I just don't think the Bruins allow Sweeney to make the moves that he's made if they're going to let him go. And it's like, sure, you can have your opinions about him, but it's like the way he handled the trade deadline, I think, was the best that you could hope for. And, sure, this summer is going to be critical with that seventh overall pick, with, the draft picks that they've accrued and the cap space. Like, it's going to be huge. But I think it's like the Bruins front office are trusting him to kind of rebuild the team. Now it's like, sure, it's probably risky, but it's like, I don't know what better options the Bruins have. Unless you're going to go out and hire a new GM that you don't know anything about, it's like, I don't know. It's almost like, as Ty Anderson put it on Sports Hub Underground, it's kind of more of the devil you know than the devil you don't know. And it's like, sure, maybe it's not the best, most ideal situation, but I don't think Sweeney is as bad of a general manager as people say. I'm not trying to say that he's fantastic, because he certainly made a lot of big mistakes. I could even tell you that the free agent deals that they made last summer, were probably mistakes, and they probably gave up too much money, but they kind of, were forced to do that. I understand. Yes, they're forced to do that based on past mistakes. I get that, but I just don't feel that he is bad enough that they just don't bring back, and they weren't not going to bring him back. You hear the post season comments by Charlie Jacobs. He trusts Neely and Sweeney to get this team, back to where it needs to be. Now, is that the right decision? Maybe not, but it's like an owner is not going to back a general manager that's like not going to be back, or like not somebody that doesn't have job security. It just doesn't make sense. Where it's like, again, the Bruins wouldn't allow Sweeney to make the moves that he made at the deadline if, they were going to let him go, or if they weren't sure. They trust him. Is he the right person to trust? Who knows? We'll see what happens. But it's like, I don't really know what other options the Bruins really had here in terms of, oh, get rid of Sweeney, hire one of the good general managers, which, by the way, good general managers don't grow on trees. You can't just go and, hire the Tampa Bay Lightning's general manager. Like, it's just like, yeah, I'm not sure what people expected there, in terms of that, extension. But I think like 2 years for Sweeney is not an eternity, and I think it's like the ownership kind of is not giving him, total like leeway. Like, if he doesn't, make the right moves for this team, he probably will get fired sooner rather than later. But I think it's like they're giving him an opportunity to build the team back up, in which, I think had the same opportunity in 2015. Maybe didn't do the best job, but it's like you now kind of are giving him another opportunity. And, hopefully there's a better result. But I think it's like, at the end of the day, the Bruins made a decision that I think, like, there wasn't really a decision to make. I know that people are upset, but I think, in my opinion, a lot of people are upset just because of, past opinions that they have about Sweeney. But I think, like, if you look at this season as a whole, did a pretty good job at the deadline. And I just feel like if that's any indication about how this offseason's going to go, I'm not, as nervous, because I think that they kind of know what the team needs in terms of, getting more secondary scoring. I think in other areas they seem to be in an okay spot, but that's the main area that I think you need to see some improvements in. So I think that's going to do it for the Bruins, other than the coaching search still going on. They'll be doing in-person interviews, it sounds like. Marco Sturm is a guy that I have my eye on to be the next coach of the Bruins. Recently was coaching with the LA Kings, AHL affiliate, obviously a former Bruins player that was acquired in the Joe Thornton trade. So kind of a way back, if you remember, that trade from way back in the day. But I do think that he would be a decent fit. It sounds like he works well with younger players. And obviously, I think somebody from, outside the organization, which I think, to me, I'm always happy with. I just think like it just is, I think, a good idea to bring in somebody different with outside ideas. So, that's the guy I would like to see the Bruins hire. Really could be anybody else. I'm hoping that it's not Laviolette or Tortorella. Don't think either of those guys would be good fits, but Jay Leach, I wouldn't be surprised either. Was an assistant with the Bruins, been with Providence for a few years as well. So, yeah, I think Jay Leach or Marco Sturm, I think, would be my guesses as to who the next head coach will be. Not sure when that announcement will come. I think when the Bruins hired Jim Montgomery, it was at the end of June, so it may be a while before we hear who the Bruins have hired. So, think we're going to move on. Talk a little Patriots. There was a mini camp that the Patriots had last week with Drake May performing, I think, fairly decently. I know that there were some people that wanted to overreact in terms of Drake May throwing interceptions during the voluntary practices that took place last week. But I think largely not concerned by it. We talked about Christian Barmore being cleared for football activity, which is great. I think, I don't know, people are going to overreact to, off-season workouts, performances or training camp stats or whatnot, but it's like at the end of the day, like, doesn't matter. Those things literally don't matter. Great to see some of the defensive players coming up big. Gonzalez obviously had a couple of those interceptions in practice, but it's just like anybody that's trying to make anything out of, statistics or, performance type stuff at voluntary workouts or training camp stuff, it's just like it doesn't matter. I think it's just people trying to make stories out of things that, again, don't matter. But I think the only thing I did want to say is that it was good to see Stefon Diggs out there during those workouts. Looks fine. Looks like the recovery is going well. Kyle Williams, it seemed like, had a good rapport with Drake May during those workouts, which I think is great. I think he's definitely a guy that you could see getting, good looks early in the season if he has a good training camp. And I think, already kind of starting where he is a great sign. I think that there was a Javon Baker touchdown catch that he had during those workouts, so good for him. Curious to see what he can do. Jalen Polk, I think, obviously it's going to be a big offseason for both of those guys. And I think especially with the drafting of Kyle Williams, does that kind of force those guys to kind of look in the mirror and be like, okay, we have a guy that's coming in basically going to compete for our job. So I'm curious, how that plays out. I hope that, this is a wide receiver room with the addition of Diggs that they can kind of push each other. I do think it's really cool that Kyle Williams has said that Stefon Diggs is like his favorite receiver growing up. And I think like getting to see the two of them working together is going to be really, really cool. I think that I do kind of have high hopes for their offense this season. I know that, it's really comes down to the offensive line and how that unit performs that I think is going to determine how the team does offensively. But seriously, I think if they get good protection and that offensive line looks better, I think that was the other thing that I wanted to mention. I'm kind of all over the place here, but I think that there was a starting or a potential starting offensive line group that was together during those workouts. And I think it had, across from left to right, Will Campbell, Cole Strange, Garrett Bradbury, Mike Owenu, and Morgan Moses, which I think, in all likelihood, probably is their starting offensive line. And I think, If you can get that group set and kind of ready to go as early as you can, like I think that's huge so that they can kind of get the communication down and kind of be good playing together as a unit. Because I think, keep coming back to this, but offensive line, I think most important position for the Patriots this season, and I think could be the difference between, this team making a marginal improvement of 2 to 3 wins on the season, winning 6 or 7 games, or the difference, or the difference between winning 2 to 3 more games or winning 5 to 6 more games, and this team is threatening for a playoff spot. I think if the offensive line is better and improved, I think this team has a shot at 10 wins. I'm not going to say that that's my expectation. My expectation, I think, is 7 to 8, that they're under 500, but it's like, who knows? A lot can change between now and, training camp, now and the start of the season, who plays well in the preseason and things like that. So I think there's reasons to be excited about this Patriots team. I think that, sure, could it look different between now and the start of the season? I think, all kinds of things could change, but I'm really excited about the team that, Mike Vrabel and that, staff is putting together. So really excited about this team, and training camp begins in a couple of months, although there will obviously be, off-season workouts as well. So those, voluntary mini camps, the OTAs and things like that. So we'll definitely pay attention to those things. So I think I can do it for the Patriots. Gonna talk a little Celtics, as obviously the season has come to an end. We talked about it last week that I think there's going to be a lot of changes for this team this season. I think that, or next season, I think that, clearly Brad Stevens has a lot on his plate to try to, juggle to get this team presumably under the second apron so that they have more ability to add talent. But I also think trying to do his best to keep this team competitive. I do think though that, like, depending on what Jaylen Brown has to do for his knee, if there's a surgery that has to happen, not sure how long he'd be out. So it's like you kind of have to weigh a couple things where it's like, is it worth it for this team to try to be as competitive as they can if, Jason Tatum's not going to be available, Jaylen Brown is going to miss a chunk of the regular season. How does that affect what the Celtics do? I do think, my opinion, Derek White is safe. I can't imagine the Celtics doing anything to move on from him. I do think Porzingis and Holiday would be the most likely candidates to get moved. I think Sam Hauser as well. So I think, those are three guys that I think distinct possibility that two of those guys, or maybe all three of those guys, don't return. And so then it becomes, okay, what do the Celtics try to do to, make up for those losses? And I think it's just kind of the case of the salary implications that, the Celtics, if they keep staying over the apron, then they lose the ability to kind of improve the team year to year, that they're kind of limited in their ability to kind of keep like a certain amount of talent around. So I feel like getting under that apron is going to make a lot of sense to trade Porzingis, to trade Holiday, to possibly look into trading Hauser. It's like you don't want to do it, but I think, again, if Tatum's not going to be available, if you're not expecting Jaylen Brown to be available for a portion of the season, it's kind of like you might have to get a little drastic. But I do have confidence in Brad Stevens that he'll be able to field a good competitive team, and this will be an interesting team to watch next season. I do think that already there's a decent amount of young talent that I think is interesting to kind of follow, Shireman with Kata, with Peyton Pritchard, and Davison, who I think could get a lot of playing time next season if the Celtics do move on from Holiday. And then also the Celtics have, those two draft picks as well, 28th and 32nd overall. So could be a possibility the Celtics, use those picks, or do they move those in a trade to try to kind of get another talented player? I'm curious about, Porzingis and kind of where he ends up if he does get moved. It's just too bad that things just didn't materialize for him this season. Obviously missed a chunk of the season with the ankle surgery from last summer, and then obviously dealt with the illness that I think really affected him in the postseason. That's unfortunate because I think you figured that he was going to be the guy that was going to make a huge difference in their playoff run this season, but just really couldn't get right, with that illness. I also think, Holiday, as great as he's been leadership wise and his ability to just be really steady, kind of you saw some slippage in his game a little bit, not shooting as well from three, and I think not impacting the game as much defensively. But I think it's something that you kind of expect with him kind of getting up there a little bit. I think that him being as expensive as he is would make a lot of sense for the Celtics to move him. But I think again, confidence in Brad Stevens, confidence in this group that has, I think, good solid coaching. I'm curious to see if Sam Cassell does stay on the coaching staff. I do know that, he's definitely a sought after guy to be a head coach. So that'll be kind of interesting to see if, he moves to a different team to coach a team that has a head coaching vacancy. But I think the only other news, Jason Tatum did make first team All NBA, which is great. I think it's fourth or fifth straight season that he's made that. So definitely a deserving honor. Was outstanding this season. And, we hope that he can kind of get back to being the guy that we expect to see out on the floor. Don't think that he plays next season. That's just kind of what my gut tells me. And so I think that you probably do not see him until the 26-27 season. But who knows? Jason's a determined guy, and I think that we all admire him for that. And it's possible that he works himself his way back, before the end of the season. I would hope not. I would hope that it's just good for him to kind of have a year to rest and kind of reset before he's back to being the guy that we expect. And I know that that's going to be hard because Jason loves to play and just loves to be out there. But I think, hopefully it's not a situation that, he's forcing himself to come back too soon, because I think that could just be devastating. So I think important for him and the Celtics to be able to stay confident and, be that, okay, you can come back and be close to the same guy, but let's not push this, even if it means having the team not be as good next season. I still expect this Celtics team to be a quality team. Don't think that they're going to be, a team that doesn't make the playoffs. I think they should be still, but obviously we'll see, what ends up happening, what the team looks like when the season starts. So I think that's probably going to do it for the Celtics. I'm going to take a quick look at the Revolution, who went or who played to a 3-3 tie over the weekend in Kansas City. Revs held a 2-0 lead at halftime in this one. Were unable to hang on, a little frustrating, but the Revs able to continue their unbeaten streak, which I think has now reached 7 games in MLS competition. So that at least is good that this team continues to pick up points. But blowing a 2-goal lead in which Kansas City scored 3 times in 8 minutes, definitely not a good second half defensively. I think just kind of breakdowns all over the place. But Kansas City definitely an aggressive team, taking advantage of their chances. But the Reds were able to salvage a tie with Maximiliano Urruti with the tying goal in the 84th minute. Revs obviously getting a goal from Shankly, which is huge. Good to see him back in the starting lineup. I think that was his first start this season, so good to see him on the scoreboard in the 13th minute. Revs also getting an own goal in the 22nd minute. So, I think definitely a game that kind of got away from the revs a little bit, but obviously always good when you can get a road point. But I think the revs definitely would have liked 3 points out of this game. But I think it was interesting to see, Shanghai starting in the starting lineup. I think largely the lineup was the same as the previous game. But I think good to see Shanghai in that starting lineup. I think Campana dealing with the hamstring issues has kept him out of the lineup for a couple of different games. It's not necessarily been games in a row, but good to know that they have some depth there. The Revs had previously lost the US Open Cup game, round of 16, against Chicago earlier in the week. But I kind of always think that it's good for the team to not be playing, extra games in outside competitions. I know that the MLS always, does those outside competitions with the US Open Cup, with the Leagues Cup, but I almost feel like I'd rather the team not do too well in those tournaments so they can kind of focus on MLS play. Because I just feel like historically the Revs are a team that they do really well in those outside tournaments, but it doesn't always translate to success in season, so kind of would prefer that they don't do well at those tournaments, so they're not having to play, extra games. It'll be interesting to see when the Leagues Cup comes up in July, how that goes for the Revs. So busy week. The Revs will have two games this week. First against DC United tomorrow night at 7:30, and then they will play Montreal on Saturday, also at 7:30. So a busy week, two games for the Revs Wednesday and Saturday, both on the road. Revs wrapping up their road trip. I've been on the road all over the place in the month of May, but they will have three home games in the month of June. They'll also have a week off. So their next game following these two against DC and Montreal will not be until June 14th. At home against FC Cincinnati. So Revs will wrap up the road trip. Hopefully they can get some points this week as they're 10th place in the Eastern Conference, just 2 points back. And 2 points back of a playoff spot in the East. So I think we're going to move on. We're going to talk some NBA. The Thunder outlasting the Timberwolves last night, 128-126. In game four of their conference final series, Thunder now lead the series 3 games to 1. Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander were outstanding in game four last night, and the Thunder have now taken control. I think at this point, my opinion, it's the championship is the Thunder's to lose. And they've responded really, really well to pretty much any challenge this postseason. So, really, pleased with their performance last night. So now, one win away from a return to the NBA Finals. Haven't been back to the Finals since 2012 when Durant, Westbrook, and James Harden were on that team. Kind of crazy to think about that was the last time that they were back in the Finals. Game four of the Pacers-Knicks series will take place tonight in Indianapolis. Pacers lead the series 2 games to 1. Knicks with a huge comeback in the second half of game three to take game three. So now it's a series. Be interesting to see if the Pacers can bounce back. Aaron Nesmith, I think, left that game with an ankle sprain. So we'll see if he's healthy. He's been really fun to watch in these playoffs. I've really enjoyed what I've seen from him, obviously. Former Celtics draft pick, I think. Just really never quite fit here in Boston, unfortunately. Had a lot of issues with the shooting, which is kind of what the Celtics drafted him for. But it's great to see him doing well for the Pacers. Has really been an excellent, scorer. He's been really good defensively as well. He's drawn a lot of matchups on Jalen Brunson in this series, and I think has played really well. So great to see for him. So we'll move on a little Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk the Hurricanes and the Panthers. Game four of the East final last night. Hurricanes stave off elimination with a 3-0 shutout of the Panthers. Frederik Andersen returned from injury to pitch a shutout. Hurricanes still down 3-1. Game five will be in Carolina on Wednesday night. Obviously, as we talked about, Team USA winning gold in the World Championships, honoring the Gaudreau brothers after winning the gold in the Western Conference. Dallas and Edmonton, the Stars, and the Oilers will play Game 4 tonight. From Edmonton, Oilers lead 2-1 over the Stars. So we'll take a look at some baseball standings here. The Angels are signing former Dodgers veteran Chris Taylor. Shohei Ohtani hitting a leadoff home run for the second time in 2 days. And we'll take a look at the standings here. Things are not looking great for the Red Sox currently, as they've dropped to fourth place in the American League East, 7.5 games out of first place. Yankees in first at 33-20, 6 games over the Rays. Detroit in first place in the Central at 35-20, 5-game lead over the Guardians and the Twins. The Mariners lead the West at 29-23, 1.5 ahead of the Astros. In the National League, the Phillies are leading the pace in the East, 34-19, 1.5 lead over the Mets. Phillies with the best record in baseball at the moment. The Cubs, 3 games up on the Cardinals in the Central at 33-21. And the Dodgers also at 33-21, 2 games over the Padres and the Giants. So quickly, some NFL notes. The Raiders making A.J. Cole the highest paid punter in the NFL with his deal yesterday. The Lions are clearing Aiden Hutchinson for full return, or for full contact. So good to see him back, as he had suffered a broken leg during the regular season last season. And yeah, I think that's what we got on football. We'll take a look at the WNBA quickly here. Caitlin Clark will miss 2 weeks with a quad strain, as the Fever off to a good start this season. And we'll take a look the standings quickly. Minnesota leads the standings. Actually, I was going to look at the conference standings. Minnesota, though, 4-0. They and the Liberty, the only undefeated teams at the moment. Liberty 3-0 on the season. Connecticut and Chicago and Dallas have yet to win a game. 0-4 for the Sun and the Wings, 0-3 for the Sky. So not the best start for the Connecticut Sun. Some games on the schedule this evening. 10 o'clock starts for Atlanta and the Sparks, and then Chicago and Phoenix. Then at 8 o'clock, Seattle and Minnesota. 7 o'clock, Golden State and New York, and Dallas and Connecticut. So one of those teams will win their first game this evening, with Dallas and Connecticut both 0-4. So we'll see a first win for one of those teams tonight. So I think that's probably going to do it for the sports. We're going to get to our top five this week. Really excited to do this one. I was recently at the movies over the weekend, and it occurred to me that I really had not been to the movies in quite a while. So I figured that top five today would be top five movies that I've seen in theaters. Now, obviously, a number of months ago, we did my top five movies. Now, did not see all of those in theaters, obviously. You know, there's a Star Wars movie on that. I was not alive in 1980 when Empire Strikes Back came out, but I figured we'd do the top five movies that I've seen in theaters. So we'll start with number five. The Batman came out in 2022. Saw this with a couple friends. Just a really awesome movie experience. You know, wanted to see the movie so badly that I settled for going to see a movie at 10:30 in the morning, So we went up, got up somewhat early to go see the movie. So definitely worth it. A great experience. One of my favorite movies already. I know it's a recent movie, but as a huge Batman fan, I thought that they did the character justice and just such a worthwhile experience to go see, any kind of big superhero movie in the theater. So that's a good one, I think, for me to start off with. Number four, Force Awakens, Star Wars Episode 7. I think just the sheer buildup for this movie just made it so exciting. It was I think that me and my family went to see it New Year's Eve 2015 when this came out, and just remember so much about it, being so excited to go see the movie to figure out what was going to happen. We actually, I think, had gone to not one of our local theaters. We had gone out of the way a little bit, and I'm not really sure why, but it was just a great experience, great movie. I really think that they, it was a great job making that movie. Not so pleased about 8 and 9, but that was definitely one that I will remember seeing in the theaters. Number three, this is maybe going to be a bit of a curveball here, but Jackass Forever was definitely one of these I had to put on the list. Saw it with one of my friends a couple years ago, and maybe the hardest I've ever laughed in the movie theater. So had to absolutely have this in my top five. Really a big fan of those movies. It's kind of a shock to some people, but I would say that definitely has to be on there as, a good comedy. Love a good laugh in the movie theater. So definitely had to have this one on here. Number two, Oppenheimer is actually the most recent movie I had seen in the theaters prior to this weekend. So definitely great experience. That's one of those movies that you can't really do it justice unless you see it in the movie theater. So just thought it was an outstanding film. Obviously, I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan, so loved the movie, thought it was outstanding. Saw it with my brothers, just an awesome experience. And then number one for me, Dark Knight is my favorite movie, so of course it's my number one movie that I've seen in the theater. I still remember a lot of details about that day, going to see it in the summer of 2008, but just an awesome movie. Like, I could do a whole podcast talking about how awesome that movie is, but I think that's easily a number one for me. Just such a great movie, so many great moments, and definitely a worthwhile experience for sure. So some honorable mentions here. I have quite a few of them. Jurassic World, really enjoyed going to see that with my older brother, as we bonded over those, older movies. So getting to see that new one, that's really cool. The Simpsons movie, big fan of that one. That's another movie that laughed a lot in the theater, so definitely enjoyed that. I think that came out in 2007, so going in the Wayback Machine for that one. Ted, also great film. Another really funny comedy that really enjoyed going to see in the theater. Toy Story 3, loved Toy Story as a kid, so getting to see the third one was definitely a little bit emotional, but definitely a fun experience to go see that one. The Avengers, really the only Marvel movie that I can pinpoint that I've seen in the theater that is like really tremendous. It's kind of embarrassing. There are a couple of other Marvel movies that I have actually not seen in theater, so you could probably say, what are you doing with yourself not, seeing Endgame or any of those in theaters, but just kind of how it shook out. But The Avengers definitely was a great experience. Joker as well, enjoyed that movie from 2019, went with a couple friends, blew my mind, just a really good film. Did not do the sequel justice. They probably shouldn't have even done the sequel, but story for another day. But I think that's probably going to be it for their honorable mentions. So I think that'll do it for me this week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. And yeah, as always, you can listen to the pod on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can follow along on Twitter and Facebook for the latest social updates. So we will talk to you next week.